Welcome back to the Birthlink Podcast. I'm so glad you're here. Today, we have a long discussion. It is a masterclass with Maria Idafi. You can find her at thebirthcoach.com or at Maria the Birth Coach on Instagram. She's a labor and delivery nurse. She is going to get into her history and her story and what she's doing now, but I find it so fascinating. If you know about spinning babies, if you know about positioning and you've been toying around with fascia and soft tissue work, body work, massage, and structural integration, then this episode you don't want to miss. We are going to get into it. Well, she's going to get into it, and I'm going to be listening, taking notes. I got to listen to it again just now as we were editing, and I mean, I was like, okay, well, this is why I got into it. It was from her. This is the first and only episode, I think, that I went right afterward, like literally right afterwards, and joined her course. Yeah, I wanted to know more. I wanted to get into fascia work and add an extra something to the work that I did at the bedside. Now, I was working at the bedside at the time, so I was able to use the techniques a few times and they worked. And they worked so well. A lot of it I was doing already with, you know, the Levon circuit and a lot of the spinning baby stuff, but this one just was a lot slower, a lot more intentional when we were doing different positions. And I was able to really dive into the actual terminology behind it, because a lot of the problems I have is advocating for the work that I want to do on patients when it comes to doctors, right? So should we definitely get into that today? This is one of those episodes where we started talking first and then I just pushed record. So don't mind the bumpy start. She gets right into her story and then we dive into this masterclass on bodywork, fascia work, and structural integration. Enjoy. Welcome to the Birthlink Podcast, presented by My Friends a Nurse. I'm your host, Colette McCulliker, a high-risk labor and delivery nurse right here in sunny California. I'm also an OB-certified specialist, birth educator, lactation expert, and mother of two beautiful daughters. I am passionate about guiding you through the miraculous journey of pregnancy and childbirth, using evidence and history and asking the reason why. I have some incredible medical friends and colleagues, and we're all here to help you navigate this often overwhelming birthing hospital system in the United States. My goal is to gain trust in birth, improve this system, and provide some valuable insights. Let's make this journey a little less daunting and a lot more joyful. Let's get into it. All right. So I gave you a little bit more about who I am and where I come from. And well, what was I saying? Spinning our wheels, right? We're lone rangers out here as coaches and birth workers.
Yes. I remember, I've been in the medical field since 1998, started as an EMT basic. And then in 2000, I joined the Air Force and I was a medic. I was a medic in level one trauma center. I did advanced care, but only in the military. You wouldn't be doing that outside. And so the military offers you a lot of educational opportunities. So I was really like close to doing a lot of like nursing stuff. So I just went to school for a nurse and thought I would end up as an emergency room nurse because that's what I was doing. I changed my mind in nursing school. I did the like women's health part and we were in postpartum. And I was like, wow, this is easy. I was thinking like, what if I did this? And then maybe instead of like adult critical care, I would go to NICU. That's really what I had planned. Before you could do a NICU fellowship in the Air Force, you had to have 2 years time on station. And so I had to go through the motions. And I ended up in labor and delivery, which was in the Air Force, it's an LDRP. So I didn't expect that because that's not what I saw. I was not familiar with birth or anything. I was just thinking, get used to little babies, get good with them, and then you'll be good in NICU. And what I ended up experiencing was during the first year, I had a lot of TDYs, which means I go train somewhere. So there was a lot of breaks as I was learning to be a nurse, but I was in obstetrics. So I'm in the LDRP. I was mostly taking care of postpartum women, realizing I was witnessing a lot of good births that I realized I didn't experience in my own life. Like I've got one son. At the time, he was 15. And I was really on a daily basis brought back to what my birth experience was like. I started to really feel like I didn't get treated well. And I didn't know that. I was 22 when I had my son. And I just kind of knew it was a pretty lackluster experience. It was that anticlimactic, you know, where am I going to be when my water breaks? I was in bed on a induction, like nothing exciting. And I ended up in a C-section for non-reassuring fetal heart tones. And I was induced for oligo. And I had no idea at the time. This was 1995. And I had no idea that you could actually make a baby come. I did not know anything about inductions. So my family, my sister, my mom, they had natural births, but we didn't talk about it. It wasn't like a thing. So, and I was a dependent wife at the time. So I was actually living in Hawaii. And that's what brought me to the States, because I married an American Navy sailor and I was from Canada.
You're from Canada, you said, British Columbia.
Yeah. And yes. I was alone in my birth. I never knew what doulas were or anything.
22, you're a baby. I was 20 with my first, and I resonate so much.
Yeah, so I really, and I didn't know really seriously, like thought, I'll have my baby, I'll go to the hospital, they'll take care of me, and everything will be fine. And I just noticed like the nurses had attitudes towards me. If I got out of bed to go use the bathroom, they were freaking out because I took the monitors off. And I didn't know, but if I hit the call bell, they never came to help me. So I know how to go to the bathroom. I don't need your help. And I wasn't even contracting really. They gave me, I think, Cervidil, but at the time I didn't know what they were doing to me. They weren't explaining very well. I actually, after I became a labor and delivery nurse, remember my son is 15, and I was like, ooh, I'm running out of time to go get his medical records. He's going to be an adult soon. So I ordered his medical records and I birthed him at Tripler Army Medical Center. And I got these records that were thin. And a couple of areas stated how I had a girl, but I had a boy. And I was reading like what meds they gave me. And I was like, they gave me Cervidil. And I was like, I don't even remember. Like, all I remember is Pitocin. And I didn't even know what that was. So I was just like watching some women have these good births, and I was very sad because I didn't get that in my experience. So that created this like kind of protector nurse that I wanted to be. Like I wanted to help women feel better than I did. And I didn't know what that looked like in birth because I was never around. I was in the emergency room. That was my medical background. So the Air Force sends you to a school called Perinatal Nurse Course. And I'd been about 9 months into the postpartum care and went to Virginia to do the labor part. This was where I was going to learn how to labor women. And we did 2 weeks of didactic and then it was 4 weeks of clinicals. So as I was in the didactic portion, and they were talking a lot about all the medical stuff. You know, they go into all the things that you need to know nurse-wise, medical-wise. And they got to comfort measures. And they were like, you could use like a birth ball. I remember thinking, in my experience, I said, nobody brought a birth ball in for me. Nobody even showed my former husband to rub my back or encouraged him to. He sat on a chair across the room while I was pretty much, you know, relegated to the bed. And I was like, you know, how come they don't offer that, you know? And I wasn't even seeing it much where I was working. And this was by now it was 2011. And I was like, I didn't even see the nurses like where I worked doing this with birth balls. And she said, well, it's because most people just get epidurals. And I said, well, you know, they wouldn't even give me an epidural till I was at least 4 centimeters. And so I was crawling all over the bed, like, and I didn't even know if I wanted an epidural because I didn't understand epidurals. My mom and sister did not have epidurals. They didn't talk about their birth, but I had no idea about anything. Like, if you want to say like ignorant, ignorant was my bliss. I didn't know what else to do. They'd given me IV medication and that didn't last long, and they weren't really encouraging anything. No showers, no heat packs, nothing. They weren't even in the room. They were very cold to me. So I said, all right, what about this epidural? They were like, well, you can't have it till you're 4 centimeters. Literally, I was every hour, can you check me? Can you check me? Can you check me? Can you check me? Like, it was awful. When my instructor said, well, most women get epidurals, I remembered going, not all the time. Like, I had to beg for one, and then I had to wait to become 4 centimeters to get one. And that's not, you know, obviously that's not everywhere, but it's still happening, right? It's just like there's places that won't give women epidurals after 8 centimeters. And so, you know, the variation of how birth happens everywhere. You can give somebody advice, but you got to watch what you give because that may not be what's going to happen where they're at. So,
you mean like as a coach? Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Or educator. Yeah. So or family.
When I started the clinicals, I had my first patient. She had cervidil and she was so uncomfortable. And I was very helpless. I was like, I don't even know what to do. And I'm asking my preceptor. And she's like, well, maybe we could give her Benadryl. And I'm like, I don't like this feeling that I don't know how to help her. So that's when I started to go outside and look for ways to help women. I came across a lot of things about doulas, but there wasn't a lot of thing. There was no social media. Remember, this is like 2011. And maybe a couple things on YouTube, but nothing. And I found a Dona website, and I'm thinking it's like a school. So I could just see if I could take these comfort measures. I didn't realize it was like individuals who held workshops whenever they wanted. But I came across a lady named Kathy Stewart, who is literally my good friend still today. And she was my doula trainer. And I meant to just go take comfort measures because they were not teaching me comfort measures in this training because, you know, every bed just gets epidurals. So, So I was like, hey, man, like, I'm already a nurse. I don't need any of those other doula stuff, but I'd like the comfort measures. And she said, yeah, sure. Come on by. So I went on a Sunday and it was life changing. I really was so interested in what was like she was teaching. It was so much about the emotional component, about the caring, about like why it's important. I didn't even know why it was important. They don't stress the importance of birth. So, I mean, they stress like living, live through it. That's how the hospitals are. Healthy mom, healthy baby. Sorry, you know, we don't worry about your experience or what happens when you go home. And so I ended up doing like the whole Dona curriculum. And then I went back to work and it was like, I was very sold on the natural. Natural birth is best. Natural birth this, not everything's natural, natural, natural. And then I really started to learn, you know, it's not everybody's cup of tea. But what I did find was a lot of women actually desire to try. They want to try. And so that made me feel like then I need to be there for them. And I need to be there for them in every capacity because I remembered how I felt the hospital will take care of me. And so I showed up the way I expected my nurse to show up for me. And that was to learn everything I could and not just how to hang mag, run pit. Like all of that to me was not birth. That's just hospitals and nursing. Because you run mag and other medications in any other inpatient floor. And what I had learned from the doula training was that these women, they are emotionally impacted. And that was proof from my own birth when I went home with my son, was just like, wow, what a lame experience. That wasn't exciting. That wasn't great. That was blah. And I didn't understand that birth was meant to change you in the most powerful way. And so I started to feel like we need to empower women, not disempower them, because that's what we're doing here. And then, unfortunately, I'm just going to say this and edit if you so wish, but I feel like it empowers nurses when they get to be in charge, but it disempowers the mothers when they take their right away of like, I don't want an IV. I don't want, you know, this medical thing, but, you know, there's women out there that like, I don't want any of this hospital help, but I just want to be here just in case. And we don't treat them like that very well. And a lot of colleagues I worked with were not comfortable with women natural because they were never taught how to help them. So they felt very uncomfortable and they didn't like being in the room when this lady was going through labor because they didn't like that they could not do anything about it. What they could do was offer you an epidural and then feel good about themselves after. And that's not, like, I didn't agree with that because I said, this is what she wants. So how do I help her? So Donna Doula program was like my first step into that. But then, well, she was natural. We were sitting in the shower together. I even like had my flight commander. I was like, hey, can we get wireless monitors? And she was like on it. She got wireless monitors. So we were in showers, like, you know, keeping the monitors on because this was still very, when I started, we were still clamping really quickly, bringing baby to the warmer immediately. We hadn't gotten into delayed cord clamping and stuff then. And
yeah, I think episiotomies were probably more popular as well, and a lot of stuff we were doing.
So then I was like, we were still running into situations of not progressing. And then I got on the computer. Like, I remember this one girl particularly, she was 8 centimeters forever. And I didn't know what to do. And they were like, oh, the baby's OP. And I was like, what's OP? I don't know what that is. And they're like, well, there's really nothing you can do about that. And I was like, at that time, I talked to her and I said, well, what if we try an epidural? And see if that helps. So she agreed. She's like, yeah, she gets an epidural, but it didn't help. And we still ended up in the C-section. So after I started to research OP, I didn't know what that was. And then that's when I came across spinning babies. And so I was stationed in England, and there happened to be a spinning babies workshop 45 minutes from where I lived. So I email this midwife that I thought was British. I thought she was British. And I was like, hi, I'm an American nurse and I'm over here overseas. And, you know, can I come to your workshop? I'm not a midwife. Like, I didn't know that she was American. So I went to my first spinning babies workshop. And then I was like, wow, like nobody knows anything about this. I was so like wowed by the idea of some of this stuff. So I took it back and my friends would help champion it, but most of them were like, I don't know what you're talking about. They weren't really jumping on board with it. I literally bought my own peanut bowl. Like, we didn't have peanut bowls. And then I would just be like, if you guys don't learn anything, could you just learn a sideline release? Like, you know, and so every time somebody's would tell me, we don't have time for that. I'm like, if I have time and I learned it, I'm no different than you. You can too. And so I started to kind of show the other nurses how to do some of the stuff, but at the same time, I was a new nurse. So they're looking at me like, who are you? You haven't even been a nurse for a year. But I'd been in the medical field. Plus, I was probably a good decade older than most of them. So I had like just a different confidence in me from age. I was like 40, it's practically almost 40. So I just knew. I was like, no, we got to do this. Like for some reason, I couldn't back down, even though I wasn't embraced with the idea. So I was just one of those. I always felt I think you get used to being the lone wolf because that's how I, quote, grew up in my nursing. I was just a very out of the box thinker, and I wasn't afraid to do things. We brought in inflatable tubs. And some of the other nurses were like, well, I don't really know what to do with like somebody in a tub. I'm like, it's a bath. How are you making this complicated? And that's how I saw things, right? So
you're a gem. I swear this is amazing.
I just was always kind of like that. But then I started to read a lot of Michelle O'Donnell. And I started to learn more about the impact on the baby. Then I got into like, this is really important. And like spinning babies was my introduction to the word myofascia. And then I was like, especially at that time, there were no other nurses. So I used to email Gail all the time, like, Gail, I had somebody and I tried this, but this didn't work. And she's like, I don't know, because I was a home birth midwife. I didn't do epidurals. And I was like, okay. So I started making stuff up. That's exactly what I did. I made it up. But I also like studied the body. So I wasn't making it up willy-nilly. I was putting things together. Really realizing like what fascia was. And I studied the like fascia was hard to get information on in where are we at now, 15 years ago. I bought these DVDs and I watch them over and over and over to understand what fascia is, how to unwind it, how I can do this with birth, with labor, with somebody with an epidural. Like I was pioneering my own way. I had nobody to ask. There was literally
social media. Yeah, it wasn't like now.
There wasn't even, yep. There was like, and I was overseas. I was in England.
Yeah.
So I just, but I knew it was important. So I kept learning more and more. And the more I learned about fascia, the more I started learning how to work with it, the more I started learning like, this is a priority. We as nurses need to know what fascia is and how to help our patients with certain fascia releases. Like, that's why I kind of say, like, I'm not out trying to make people body workers. Like, that's the trail I went, but I wasn't a body worker. I was a labor and delivery nurse doing this with my patients. It's more than positioning. You have to release fascia. Some people don't need the release, so the positioning seems to work. But it was the women that I would do all the positioning with, and they were upright, moving like what they say you have to do, be upright, mobile, moving. We're doing these positionings, we're doing sideline releases, and I'm like, they're not always working. And why? And so as I started dipping more into what fascia was, I started to learn how to do the hands-on fascia releasing. And I took quite a bit of training, craniosacral, dynamic body balancing, stuff from a pelvic floor physical therapist, Lynn Schulte, who really taught me a lot in like intravaginal work that I use when I'm pushing with a patient. And all of these, I'm like, we got to level up. We have got to, as labor and delivery nurses, over 90% of births are in the hospital. And as much as doulas are wonderful, they have a line that is drawn in each room that it varies. It varies among the staff that are in that room. That so we can't put the responsibility on the doula, right? And most of the women I know never had doulas. So I'm like, if 90% of women are birthing in hospitals, every woman practically, you know, it's almost 100%, but they're all getting a nurse. So why are we stopping our education on like how to run some fluids and do a little bit of peanut ball? Some are using peanut ball. They don't even know like a strategy behind it, right?
No, they have not. They put a poster up on the wall and said,
but even if you put like, they'll say closed knee pushing. And
why? Like, why are you doing this for that?
Because even if you, and closed knee pushing is the incorrect term, because what you want to do is internally rotate the femurs. But if their soft tissue is too tight, you can position them all you want. It's not going to do anything. So you have to start with the soft tissue first. And then, so I started like the way I was learning how to do structural massage is what I first learned how to do. They called it structural massage. It's structural integration. It's Rolfing. It's what else do they call it? It's got different names to it, right? So structural massage was how I first started to learn from Real Body Works. That's who I was first training with. Then I went into anatomy trains with Tom Myers. And now I'm finally in school at the Rolfing Institute. And when I started to think, like first I learned anatomy, everything that's attached to our pelvis, I got to release that. And then I had to learn how to do that. You know, you want to call it deep tissue massage. It's really not, but sometimes you just got to say it what people would understand, right? So I thought anything that is touching this bone, anything that is touching your pelvis has to be released. How do I do that? And it was so overwhelming in the beginning because I'm like, where do I start? And what I did was I just started with a sideline release and I integrated soft tissue or fascial release. Soft tissue mobilization is another technical term for it, while they were in a sideline release. And then I remember being taught like opening the ribs, and I would cross my arms. I would hook my one hand on the hip while the other pushed up on the rib cage. And then I started looking at the muscles, and our latissimus dorsi is connected to our hips. So now I got to release the back. The latissimus dorsi connects to the arm. So I have to release all the way back up to the arm. The ribs and the QL, like the QL is connected to the 12th rib and the hip. So I have to release that. Like I studied this book called Trail Guides, and it's one of the best books, I think, on what was immediately touching. And then I would just, what I called go globally. I would go up, I would go down, I would go side, I would do the back, I would do the front. And my work started to really show these women were like, their stalls were breaking, their births were easy, they felt good. They would be like with epidurals, like here's the mistake. Epidurals do not relax you. If your soft tissue was already stuck, it's going to stay stuck. What happens though, if your mind, because our mind is the most powerful tool we have. I did a lot of training with Bob Proctor, completely not about birth, but he was a cast member in The Secret. And he's like, I felt like I kept saying to women who wanted to birth naturally, you know, it's mind over matter. But what I didn't understand is some women could do mind over matter while other women were stuck in a belief that they couldn't. So I wanted to learn how to reach that belief and shift it. That's how I ended up in coaching, was mind is like when you believe, in the subconscious, whatever you believe in the subconscious, it drives your behavior. So if they did not believe in themselves, I could not convince them, especially in the moment with the birth. They were already convinced they couldn't do it. So once they get an epidural, the mind cannot control the body anymore. So the body is allowed to do what the primal brain was trying to let it do, but your logical brain was getting in the way. And so it disassociates. It does not relax you. Because why don't women progress with epidurals, right? So I get into the body work. And then when I'm doing the body work, I'm seeing contraction patterns go from dysfunctional to functional. Then I read a book. Well, I read it was the second time reading this book. But after I learned so much more about fascia, because fascia now has been studied enough to know this is a system. It's a communicative system in our body. It integrates and it weaves through our circulatory system, our nervous system, our lymphatic system, our musculoskeletal system. When our brain, because the pituitary gland is up in our brain and it wants to release oxytocin, well, the fascia is like this web that dictates whether or not these muscles are going to lengthen and shorten, slide and glide against each other, contract or relax, whatever you want to call it. But our circulatory system is embedded through them as well. So I started to say, what if the brain, pituitary gland, was releasing enough oxytocin? But you're thinking of like this highway. You got four lanes. The oxytocin is just a rolling. And then you come into some construction, bottlenecks. Now the oxytocin isn't getting to the target organ. Because what do hormones do? They get released and they head to the target organ. The target organ for oxytocin, one of them, because there's more than one, is the uterus. So when I do the soft tissue body work, I watched the contractions go from spacey or coupling to regular, and they progressed and delivered really quite quickly after. And I'm like, if they didn't have an epidural, they would get more strong contractions and they would be like, whoa, oh, whoa. And I'm like, now you're getting what you should have got 4 hours ago, because the way fascia can strangle the soft tissue, which means our circulatory system, even our nervous system wrapped up in that. So maybe things feel more painful too, right? So when I read the oxytocin factor, and she was talking about all the ways oxytocin works in our body, I was also on a fascia summit. And I'm like, because I multitask. And they're talking about how fascia, like the cellular level of it and how it's a system and how it gets through, and it's a communication system as well. And I was like reading this book and looking at the fascia, and I'm like, oh my God, what if women had fascia release done in pregnancy, would they even need inductions? Would they even need post-date inductions? Would they even need augmentation? Because especially for prodromal labor, right? And prodromal labor, I call it my triage protocol. They come in, they're in prodromal labor. I'll do certain things, and I can tell when they're in, it's labor. And I'm like, if I can do what I do, they will progress. And I can look at them and be like, if I can do what I do, they will feel better. Their contractions will space out and they'll go home. I can tell who's going to stay, who's not. And I started to make a protocol up. So when they come in, if they're in triage, they're unmedicated, right? So first you have to get their buy-in. And it might be their third visit where, they're ready for anything. They will do anything at that point. And so I'll always start with a forward-leaning inversion because I know most women have no idea what that is. I always bring a picture. I show them. I'm like, this is what it looks like. I know it seems scary. I said, but it's going to help. When I teach dysfunctional labor maneuvers, I ask, what does a forward-leaning inversion do? So if I asked you, what does a forward-leaning inversion do? How does it work? What would you say to me?
Me, I would say it relaxes the pelvic floor and opens up enough so that you can, the baby could possibly get into a better position, which then would cause a reaction and help progress.
So what a forward-leaning inversion does, you have these ligaments. You have a sacral tuberous or a uterosacral sacral ligament. You have a round ligament. You have your broad ligament. And all of those, when you invert, the weight of the uterus gives them a pull. And a lot of the uterosacral ligaments, from a study, like not for birth, but pelvic floor, what they've noticed is about, I think, 80% of uterosacral ligaments are not attached to the sacrum. They are more attached to one of the muscles. I want to say the coccygeus in the pelvic floor. So it's not necessarily always touching the sacrum, but when you invert and you wait, the fascia has time to unwind on those little muscle or those little ligaments. Fascia needs time to let go. And so that's why you kind of hang there for as long as you do. Fascia needs about 3 to 5 minutes to unwind. So you're taking these ligaments that are locked and possibly imbalanced. Like one might be locked while the other is just fine, but that puts that twist in. That makes maybe the baby malpositioned, which isn't helping you. So this is what, when I teach in dysfunctional labor maneuvers, I want you as the nurse to know that. I don't need my patient to know that, right? So I just say it helps give a stretch to some ligaments. And they're more familiar with round ligaments, so I'll say round ligaments. But, you know, there's more to it. But that is like first things first, because it's a scary position. So they do that, and then they get up. And then I put them in the sideline release. So then if I said to you, as the nurse, what does sideline release do? What do you understand about it? So I'm going to ask you, what do you know about sideline release? How does it work?
Same idea. I would say to release fascia. How I present it to my patients at the bedside is we have this fluid and tissue around our joints that are there for good reason to protect us as kind of shock absorbers. But during labor, especially, this is when things are shifting around and we need to start helping it the best we can, especially with an epidural, to relax the fascia and allow for better movement. And I incorporate the sideline release to hit certain parts accompanied with a little massage. And yeah, it helps a lot.
So what a sideline release does for the nurse's brain, okay, not the patient, because we keep it simple for the patient. Mm-hmm. For the nurse's brain, when you're laying and they're on sideline release and they bring their leg down, the traction of the leg, the weight of the leg, pulls on all the external rotators. So you have some like obturators. There's obturator internus, obturator externus. There's glomellus, superior, inferior. There's your glutes. And those are what actually make our legs externally rotate. Those get short. And then what they do is, especially the piriformis, so that's another one. So the piriformis, that one attaches to the sacrum, and then it attaches to the greater trochanter of our femur. So when those are short or contracted, they will not allow the mobility of the pelvis. So when you hang the leg will pull on those muscles, and you have to wait. You got to wait at least 5 minutes. And I know they say like three contractions. I'm like, when you're touching the skin, as you start to like, when I started incorporating the soft tissue mobilization, I started to feel the tissue. And there was some that I was like, it's not ready yet. This one is not ready yet. You can feel the hardness of the tissue. So I would glide my hand down the leg and wait for it to pink up, the tissue to get soft and supple. And sometimes it would be maybe 5 contractions. But then like while the leg is hanging and you've got the obturator internus, the obturator internus also has a connection to the pelvic floor muscle. So therefore the pelvic floor muscle is getting lengthened as well. So that's again, why are you doing both sides? Because only one leg is hanging. That means that leg is only letting go on that side. So then you turn them to the other side to do the other. So what you're really doing is creating length in these external rotators that have a connection from sacrum or the ischial tuberosities onto the femur. So that's helpful because when you want to do internal femur rotation, those are the muscles that have to lengthen to allow the inferior portion to open. So if those are not taken care of, it's pointless. So when I'm doing the sideline release, like, and I'm thinking, you know, obviously what I noticed one time, this girl had, you know, the glucometers that are implanted. So she had it implanted in her thigh and it was implanted in her right thigh. She was, I want to say, roughly about 300 pounds. And the doctor was really like, please, like, I don't want to take this lady for a C-section. It's not good for her because of her size and being a diabetic. She was not a GVM. She was a diabetic. So she said she'd been stuck at 7 centimeters. So I said, okay. So I went in because I just got on shift and she was stuck at 7 centimeters, but her cervix was asymmetrical and more of the left was gone versus the right. So I started doing a sideline release on her right and her implant. That whole leg felt cold. That leg was hard. And I was just doing soft tissue mobilization, like bringing blood flow back to it. And remember, when women have an epidural, they are not moving. Nursing 101, okay? When people don't move, they get contracted. And just because you turn them to a side does not mean you just mobilize them. You just turn them. They're still not mobilized. So hour after hour, their body is getting tighter and tighter and tighter. So imagine what happens when me and you get off these chairs after this podcast. We're going to walk like some old lady for a couple of minutes, and then we're going to work it out. Women don't get that opportunity with epidurals. They're not moving. Switching positions is not moving. So we need to change the language. We moved their position. That was it. So I was working on her thigh, and it just felt so hard and cold, almost like, you know, when something's sort of thawing, it's sort of kind of, you can squish it a bit, but it's still very frozen. It felt like that. And I worked it and 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 worked it. The thing is, when you start understanding the soft tissue and you go to, you do different sides, you know what that meant? When I turned her, I didn't have to work on the other side that long because the problem was not coming from the other side. The problem was coming from the leg that carried this implant, because I think it, you know, the integrity of the flow of the body was interrupted with this piece in her body. And sure enough, like she was complete and we had a beautiful, easy delivery. And I was like, this is, to me, it was like very interesting because the implants are relatively new. I don't come across a lot of people with them, but I have had another. She was more of a client. She wasn't pregnant, but she had an implant in her left tricep. And when I was doing soft tissue mobilization on that arm, she was like, oh my God, that really hurt. And I was like, there's something about this implant that's causing, a flow of communication, blood flow, lymphatic flow, even, you know, our energy through our bodies. If you notice like somebody has an implant or something, then that might be the side you start working on first, because the other side probably doesn't need as much. And it was showing in her cervix as well. It was dilating over onto the left, but not the right. So after I got the right side of her leg warmed up, it was soft again, it was supple. She also, they feel it. They're like, this feels so good. And so I'm like, you know, like epidurals are masking our idea of like their flow in their body. And you know, moving them, of course we have to move them, but stretching them, we have to stretch them. We have to rub them. We have to help mimic like other things that they would normally be doing if they were up and moving. And some of it is just, even if what you do doesn't work, the attention you gave them, that they, I would get a lot of comments of like, you know, kind of unfortunately, as the last nurse just didn't do anything. They feel like didn't do anything. And I'm like, you know, not everybody knows this, because I've gone out and just learned on my own time, my own dime. And so eventually, like in 2015, I became a Spinning Babies approved trainer. And then by 2017, I'd moved to Italy. I wasn't training them. So I stopped doing workshops. But that's when I started to study. In 2017, I started to study anatomy trains. And that's when I really got into the fascia work. And then I started like going further in, I did muscle energy technique, positional release technique, and I blend all of them with the soft tissue mobilization. If I can learn it, other nurses could. So I started teaching other nurses, and they were gravitating to it. They were feeling empowered themselves of like, I got something to offer my patient. And then, so I started creating my own version, dysfunctional labor maneuvers. And that was 2019. And then of course, COVID hit. And then while we had COVID, I was like, you know what? One of the things I used to struggle with as a Spinning Babies trainer was actually getting people to the workshops. A lot of people couldn't travel. They had kids. Nurses didn't want to pay. They were like, and I was like, at the hospital, I felt should be responsible for that education. But all they ever want to say is, where's the proof? Where's the proof? Even though it's gaining momentum and they're putting posters up and they're, you know, they're like, yeah, sure, go learn it if you pay for it. So that's what got, and at the time, because of COVID, all these online platforms were coming out. And I was like, what if I put my workshop on an online platform? Then you can take it at your own pace. You can, you know, you can buy, have the receipt, try to tax deduct it. I got nursing CEUs, like 9.25 nursing CEUs. I tried to make it 10, but they were like, not enough hours. But it's like, okay, I knew accessibility was something that was the challenge. So I did an online course. So I have an online course. But then what I always remembered is in the moment, right? You're in the room. And even people I taught, I get messages from, hey, I have this. They tell me what they have and tell me what they've done. And then I'll reply back and be like, okay, do this, 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 and this now.
Like an algorithm of sorts.
Yeah. So that's what brought the idea of the app, because like, that's where I'm like, if I can tell them this over WhatsApp or Messenger, or then what if they just had this as an app? So when I built the app is based on algorithm. The app is based on the most common scenarios that I could think of that we come across. So, and I divided it because parents, they're not the same as the birth professionals, right? So I have one, parents can sign up when they're specifically 38 weeks or more and in prodromal labor. That's what it's there for. It's not a prenatal app. It's to help you if you are alone, if you keep getting sent home from triage, to do these things in your house. So, you know, that's for parents. And what they do is they can say, have had, like, my labor is irregular. Click. Did I get a cervical exam? No. Maybe they haven't been to the hospital. So, no. And so then it's like, what's the station of the baby? And they can, if they were checked and they were told, they can put minus, zero, or plus, or it doesn't matter. So they click on the doesn't matter because they haven't really been seen. And then it says, okay, do this video, this video, this video, this video. And that's the same as for the professionals, except the professionals, I made it where, are they in triage? Did they just get admitted and nothing has been done for them? Have they been there a few hours? And maybe 4 or 5 hours ago, you gave something a try. It's still not really quite working. So what's next? So it's like, do they have an epidural? What's their cervix? What's their station? Have they changed? And you put all this information in. And then what comes up is just simple how-to videos. You don't need to have taken any workshop. You don't need to have really learned anything. You can just watch the videos. I made the videos to be like somebody has never taken a workshop or parents have never been shown or heard of this, because that was the gap that I saw missing. I worked at 4 military hospitals. I worked at a civilian hospital here, and I work at a birth center as well. And if I asked anybody if they'd ever gone to any kind of workshop, the answer was no, no, no. So I'm like, so, you know, how do you know what you're doing? And it was like, well, we don't. We just kind of guess. And so that was like, well, this, then now you don't need to guess. And I put the price point of the app to be something that a nurse would think $4.99 a month. So what? So what? Right? So that it's there for them. And then I was like, if you took the online version of dysfunctional labor maneuvers, you always have access to that material. So if you want to go remember why you're doing what you're doing, you have that. But I know when it comes to birth, you don't have time to go back and sift through the videos to find what you need. You can just use the app, because the app is only there for the problem. It's only there for labor. It's not there for prenatal anything. So if they're prodromal, if they're in triage, if they're admitted, if they have an epidural, because you know if they have an epidural, you're going to do things a lot differently. You're not going to, I personally will not put anybody with an epidural in a forward-leaning inversion. There's just, it's, no. I think the people who do it, you're asking for trouble.
I've never seen that done, but I can only imagine.
I've heard some say they do, and I would never, because you really don't know what their legs are going to do, right? So I keep, like, and I remember when I was first doing some of these maneuvers or positions, and I could not piss off anesthesia, because if I started making enemies, I wasn't going to be able to promote doing this. So I was like, okay, when it comes to an epidural, what am I going to do? And I remember when I did my first epiduralized person on a Walter, and I was like, okay, I told the dad, I was like, you got to help me, because I don't want to ask any other nurses. They're going to freak out if I do this. So we turned her sideways on the bed, because at the time, I was still new to even doing, I think I was just a few months out of my first spinning babies workshop. And so I was like, okay. So I had her turn, and then I put a little bump under her because I was so scared of her being on her back, and her blood pressure was going off like every 15 minutes because she had epidural. And so, and then we put her in Walters, and I was just like holding the monitors going, God, I hope my preceptor doesn't come in here. I hope my preceptor, I was still on RET. And then, so I had her husband help me move her around because I didn't want to get caught. And so there were just some in the very beginning, I was so afraid of doing some of these because I didn't know, but I would think logically, is this dangerous for her? No, it isn't. But if we don't do it, what's going to be the alternative? Like a C-section. So we have to take the chance. We have to, like, when you're kind of pioneering things, you got to be the risk taker. But there were some lines I drew, and forward leaning inversion with an epidural was my line. I was not doing that. But as I started incorporating soft tissue mobilization, that wasn't until about 2019. So I went from 2011 all the way up to that, just doing positions. And I did start adding stretches in, though. I would stretch the hamstring. And then just because of like what I knew about the psoas muscle and the hip flexors, I would stretch the hip flexors while she was on her side and do passive stretching. And that was doing a really good job. And then when I started adding in the soft tissue mobilization, so when I developed the app, I kept it very basic, but there's room to add to it if the demand starts to come. Because I do, you know, I think about like, what about the nurse who's 1 year in, right? She's worried about hanging pit and mag still. And I'm all like, start soft tissue mobilization. So I left that out for now, but it is a how-to. Here's what I got based on my algorithm. Here's the videos. The videos are what I would do. This is what Mariah would do. And then I did peanut ball positions. And I thought of things, weird things, like the patient that can't go to the other side because the baby goes poo-poo when you put her on her left or her right. But you don't have to keep her in the same position. You may have to keep her on the same side, but you can definitely do different positions. And then where's the baby in the pelvis? The station matters on how you're going to use that peanut ball. And then so in the app, I have like peanut ball use for the epiduralized patient. The patient that does not have an epidural, I recommend upright movement after you do the work. And so those were all the things, like the way the app right now is designed was situations that I've come across, how I solved them, and then just the videos are how to. And you can like hit the 2+, you know, the times 2 speed in case you're like, this is too slow. I made it slow so you don't have to keep rewinding it. But then I also gave you the option to like speed it up if you're like, I know this. Okay, da da da. And get past it because everybody's at their own level of comfort with it. But I would
pull it out and watch it with the patient. I was like, let's look at this together so you know I'm not just making this up.
Well, that's where whenever I would show a forward-leaning version of Walters, I would always, here's what we're gonna do. And then they're like, okay. Okay. And then because you're working together. And so when I was creating the things that I created, it was from the struggles that I had previously, like trying to get access for, I mean, what I would love, this is what I would ultimately love is I want to get my online version in the hospital CBTs. So when you have a new hire, part of their training is dysfunctional labor maneuvers so that everybody has been trained. They not some and not nobody paying for it either, right? Because this is not something that I feel nurses should go out and have to seek and pay for because this is what they're doing at work. And I'm like, we have all these online training modules that, let's face it, have you ever used ACLS on the labor and delivery unit?
I have.
Like,
I haven't. Unfortunately. But one time. Right. NRP, a handful. It's like serious NRP, ACLS, because my patient coded, unfortunately. But
so you have, like,
it's not as much as I would use.
I Exactly. So you've got like this, everybody had, like we do RQI. And so every 3 months we're doing these BLS, ACLS on how, like you.
And spending $300 sometimes if you're a traveler and you have to buy it yourself.
Yeah. And then you also have like, when I was in the Air Force, we were doing it every 2 years. So we actually had to go do the training. So we couldn't be at work. So we were taken off the floor to go do the training. And I'm like, so we're doing this. And I could say when I worked in the ER, I did that all the time. When I work on labor and delivery, I don't do that. NRP, yes, we do that. But the BLS and stuff like that, like the amount of times I would say that a labor and delivery nurse has to use that versus how many times she could pull out some dysfunctional labor maneuvers. Like, I'm going to make up a number, but let's just say 20 to half a one.
Oh my God, so much more than that.
So much more than that. Something that
20,000 to one.
You would literally use on a almost a daily basis if you were to just take the staff as a whole, right? Maybe your patient didn't, but somebody else's does. And so that's where I want it. I want it in the CBTs for hospitals because with 90% of births, and then you've got, you know, doulas that do this outside, then when you're coming inside, like they're sometimes like, can I do this? Do you mind if I do this? Because there's some nurses that don't want their patient touched when they have an epidural or maybe they're on mag or, you know, but those women still need dysfunctional labor maneuvers just because they are, you know, especially delegated to the bed. You still have to help them through their labor. And I feel like some doulas that get hired, the predictability of their client getting induced, right, is like, it's unknown. Their client doesn't want that, but if they do end up being induced, you know, the doulas have, you know, now they kind of are like, well, they've got, you know, all this stuff on them. And I don't know if the nurse is going to feel comfortable because if we get in a sideline release, that monitor might not be picking up the baby. And, you know, but if everybody is on board with it, then there's going to be like, I used to help them finagle the monitor because I'm like, if the monitor's on, nobody's going to bother you. But once the monitor falls off, the nurse is going to come in here and they're not going to want you to do anything because they want the baby to be on.
I've
the
had
monitor.
Moms just hold it like, don't worry, yeah. I got it. Or put their underwear back on and then cover it. And, you know, there's ways to get around. There's way. And sometimes I just have to go in every 5 minutes and chart fetal heart tones, assess, unable to read monitor, unable to read due to maternal position, RN at bedside, RN holding. Like, I'll just continue doing that because my priority is getting that mom moving and the positions. As long as I know the baby is okay and I'm going to chart that, then I am you have to stay still.
Yeah. There's
but I'm rare.
I've seen where I do a sideline release, right? And it gets a little hairy. And I'm like, just hang in there. This baby is moving. We're doing something. And so I'm like, hang on, just keep your leg there. Don't move. Like, and you're juggling three things, but you're like, you know, yeah, okay, put your leg back up for a second. Let's get it on there. And then we'll go back. Like you have to have the courage to say, let's try to figure this out, but still work on this particular thing because the point is birth. And then when I'm having like, I guess even with in the app, I have a Walters with a mother without an epidural and a Walters with a mother with an epidural. Like see them both. You can do them two different ways. You don't have to break the bed down. You can do it off the side. You can, you know, I try to always think not everybody fits this mold. That was one of the struggles, right? Was when some colleagues that I would work with, they were like, well, I can't do it because, and it would be like more of a fear. They weren't comfortable with it. I don't really know like how that is going to work. And I'm like, well, let's think it through. Let's make it up. You know, that's why it's so important for you to know, what does the side lying release do? What does the forward leaning inversion do to specific muscles and ligaments, so that if you can't do that one, what can you make up that will still hit that muscle, right? So that's where, you know, it became important for me to help nursing staff in particular understand what we're doing, why these maneuvers work, and then if you can't do this particular one, how can you recreate it in another way so that it can still get done, right? Because it's not, you know, there's some, like when it came to the forward leaning inversion and epidurals and even women that were just too tired for it, I was like, well, I put them backwards on the bed and I put their elbows on the foot and lowered the foot, which is what really upset me when we got our new beds. And I would just like to not put a shout out for the Lynette beds. No hospital should ever buy them ever, 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 ever until they make the foot electronic. Because I cannot do my work with that.
That's a tough one. I've seen it at the conference.
It's terrible. They're the worst. And we bought them at the hospital that I was just working at. We bought them and I was like, how am I going to put the foot of the bed down now? Because it's a handle. And she was sitting where I thought she was sitting on the seat of the bed. And I was like, well, let me lower the foot to get a different angle. And she was actually on the foot and we just went down together.
Oh my gosh.
And then I couldn't get it back up because I'm not strong enough.
Oh, no.
I've sent an email to Lynette Beds telling them that we will recreate a bed together because your bed is awful. They're not even, they have a .cz. So they're not American. And it wasn't even in English. So I had to like translate. Not American made people.
Good to know.
But they're terrible beds. And so anyway, my other beds that my heart belongs to, I would just lower the foot. Their elbows would be on the foot. So their angle, that we could get a bit of an angle. Like not as great as a forward leaning inversion, but that was the safest I could do with what I had. And so it's about understanding what these are doing so that when we have to make up something different, maybe because we have crappy Lynette beds and we can't do it with that, we have to create something else, we know what it is we're creating to help. And I mean, I think a good example was when whoever thought of like flying cowgirl for the peanut ball, right? They were trying to open up the pelvic space. And that was like, you know, just putting together what they could and creating that movement. And I feel like when we go back to the idea of lone wolf, right? How many of us are making stuff up that's pretty damn good and we just have no idea this is what we're all
right.
doing?
Yeah.
We're recreating a wheel by ourselves and it's exhausting. And that's exhausting. Why it's just we're reaching out. Like I wanted to reach out to labor and delivery nurses specifically because we are the ones. Like, you know, the amount of births that are in the hospital, and we have, 3 million babies born in the U.S. a year, and something like 20,000 labor and delivery nurses. Like, and you're only as good as the preceptor you had.
Right. My preceptor, I started a new hospital, and we had Pitocin, and we had a discussion because I made sure she knew I that's what I'm about. I want to talk things through. And she was precepting me and she was asking, what else would we do besides Pitocin? Because she's like, no, we should go continue going up because the doctor had said the baby was having late decelerations. And she's like, well, I'm fine with you continuing to go up on Pitocin, even with this drip, so we can get her delivered. And I had said something, I'm like, well, there's more that we can do besides the Pitocin, right? And I was thinking of movements and even speaking with her, what's going on, like mind, body, soul, let's move, let's see what blocks we have. And she looked at me and she's like, you really think the mind, like, yes. And she looked at me sincere. I actually adore her the way she was my preceptor, but she was looking at me like with curiosity, like, you really think that the mind has plays a role in the contractions? And I said, I do. I really do. I also think there's a lot more going on. Like you mentioned, the circulatory system, and there's so little that we actually know about birth. But what I do know is that it's way more than just increasing Pitocin. So what else can we do? And we never had to increase the Pitocin, and yeah. She delivered on our shift. She was stuck at 4, and on our shift, we delivered her smooth, didn't have to push very long. Well, I hope I opened her eyes a little bit, and yeah. You know even more than me. So I'm just like, oh my gosh, what else can we do?
When I do an abdominal release, so when your, you know, sacrum is cradled in your hand, and then your top hand is on their low abdomen, there's actually a very thick fascial, we call it an aponeurosis. So there's an abdominal aponeurosis in that area. And I just hold in there. So while I'm lightly compressing, because compression always rehydrates fascia, and I talk to them, because that's something I learned. The abdominal release has to be held for about 30 to 45 minutes. So I said, okay, that's fine. It gives me, where some nurses will be like, I don't have that kind of time. I was like, this gives me time to actually check in. So I remember this girl, because she was my last patient. And I hope I don't cry, because she was my last patient as an Air Force nurse. And she was an induction. She came in, she was in the clinic, and they said, oh, you know, your NST looks a little, I don't know. There was no real, it was just the doctor didn't like how it made her belly feel. So she said, would you like to have an induction? Because I kind of just don't really like the looks of your strip. Not that there was anything obvious on there. And so the girl was like, okay, you know. She goes up. She wants to do all that safe for her baby. So she comes up during the day, a little bit later in the day, because it's not a scheduled induction. When I got there, she was just kind of getting settled, or maybe we gave her Cytotec so we could put a balloon in. We do balloons. Well, not we, but most of the military facilities do cooks. And so I think she had some Cytotec, and then on my shift at about, you know, it was somewhere maybe 9 in the evening or something like that. We put the cook in, and then at about 5, I pulled the cook out, and then around 6, I started Pitocin. That was AM. I came back 7 PM. She was still a cook 5, still
cook 5. I know exactly what you mean.
Yes. And high dose Pitocin by then, and it was 7. And she was like, you know, the doctor that was on, relatively new doctor, kind of fresh out of the residency. He was like, yeah, she's still kind of, and they broke her water during the day shift. And he's like, oh, she's like, she'll probably be a C-section. So like, how about we kind of recheck her around 9? And I was like, challenge accepted. I always say that. And it wasn't my patient, but I was charged. So the nurse that did have her, I was like, come on, I'm going to show you some stuff. So I started with a abdominal release, because when somebody's not responding to Pitocin, I start with an abdominal release. And I talked to her. And in her chart, she had a history of abuse. And I was thinking, I wonder if it has to do with that. Now, I've taken the Penny Simkin When Survivors Give Birth lecture twice. And I did a more recent version, but I had done one like from my doula trainer when I was in Virginia, brand new nurse. So I always remembered that some, like, you know, 1 in 3 women are abused. So more than likely your patient is. And so I was like thinking that maybe is what's holding her up, maybe. So I was like doing abdominal release and we're just talking. And I'm like, how are you feeling? And she's like, I guess okay. And I'm like, okay. And I just wait. You always wait. And then she starts crying. And I'm like, ah, there it is. And I'm like, what's going on? And she says, like, you know, they made it seem like my baby was so like in danger. And I came up here and now it's been like over a day and I might end up in a C-section because I made the decision to stay. I could have been at home. My baby seems to be okay because I'm not, you know, being in an emergency C-section. And I was like, you know what? You're right. I said, you're absolutely right. Your baby actually is fine. I said, and I'm sorry that that was sort of presented to you and you came up only with the, you only knew what you knew. Right? I said, that was all you had. So you made the best decision with what you knew. I said, but here's a little secret. She says, what? I said, you got me. I said, and I do some magical shit. And she was like, ha, ha, ha. She starts laughing. And then that was about it for the, so she had her good cry. I found out what she was really upset about, not what I thought it was. And so, you know, she was upset about the induction and the fear of ending up in a C-section. And then I did sideline release. By then, she'd actually had epidural too. So it was sideline release. I stretched her hamstrings and her hip flexors. And I did soft tissue mobilization. I put her in a Walters. And that girl ended up being a nurse delivery. Like, yes, she did. She's her daughter. And it was like, you know, those were the things of like, releasing her fear, just validating it. And one of the things I'm doing now with dysfunctional labor maneuvers is I'm actually reconstructing it because nurses are not given comfort measures training. So I want to put comfort measure training in. I had to go do that. I had to pay for a doula workshop, right? And I was like, and I always, it made me not afraid of natural birth, right? So I'm adding that. And I'm adding information about when survivors give birth. I'm not doing like the lecture, but I want nurses to really understand that it's there. And what do we do when nobody's disclosing their background? And they don't have to, because there's little signs that people give off. And if you understand that and you see it and you recognize it, then maybe your words may be more gentle. Maybe, you know, some jokes you might have told, you won't tell, and things like that. And then going, so I want to create it where it's like, you've done the comfort measures, you've done an emotional release, but she's still in a dysfunctional pattern. Now let's step in with dysfunctional labor maneuvers, right? So we are the holistic approach at the bedside, as we really have the opportunity to be, which, that was my trajectory. I just put the 15 years of my trajectory into a new, like, updated program. I'm updating it now because I was like, one of the things we don't get is comfort measures. And we sort of like, you know, some people know from other people. Some people have no idea. Some people just know how to squeeze hips. And, you know, there's, I've done hypno babies for doulas. I've taken that training. I've taken the doula training. I've got my body work. And I was like, you know, we can, when we're really talking about changing the whole birthing system in a hospital, like the realism is it's not leaving the hospital. The realism is women are not going to stop choosing epidurals. So we have to work with what we got. And the other thing is like when we talk about 1 in 3 women being essayed, whatever thing to say on a podcast. I don't know. I would just say sexual assault. But then so are the nurses who take care of her. So are the doctors who take care of them, right? We're all in a need for healing, all of us. And I took a 9-month program called the Birth Healing Intensive by Lynn Schulte. She's the one I mentioned. I've taken a few of her programs, but that was 9 months of us doing our own shadow work. And then, and the other things, but it was all about healing us so that we are there for the people that maybe we recognize need healing as well. And we can do something in a small amount of time that won't extra traumatize them, re-traumatize them. Or like myself, I thought I was going to go in and get taken care of. And instead I felt belittled and I didn't have like, I don't call it a traumatic experience, but I had like a suboptimal experience and
a disappointing experience.
It was 15 years later that I realized I was grieving my birth experience. It didn't empower me. It didn't make me the mother. It didn't transform me. And I was like, birth is meant to be transformative. Now that I know more about the power of it, we're building life, we're birthing life. And this is what women deserve. And we're failing them because we are not thinking outside of birth. We have to go outside. So when I said the body work meets the birth work, but I'm also an energy medicine practitioner because that is also an issue as well. And so, you know, I think like where I'm like, so I'm not telling people go out and be a body worker, an energy medicine worker, and all these things that I have become, but I am creating something that sort of blends it on a doable level for nurses, because I feel like this is what needs to be done for birth in hospitals. Birth outside of hospitals, I mean, I feel like they kind of could maybe learn the body work and stuff, but you know, they've got the right intention of just letting this mother make her own decisions and feel empowered. And for some reason, when we transfer that into the hospital, it gets lost. And that's where I was like, I used to want to work in a birth center so bad. But then who's here in the hospital for these mothers? And then now we become where we're at. And I'm like, okay, so instead of me doing like one mother at a time, what if I do hospital systems at a time? And then you've got all these nurses that are like trained in ways that they're not training them that can really show up for the client, because she's a client, she's not a patient. They're not, you know, like they have their dreams. They have their, when I started my pregnancy, the whole time was like, I wonder where I'll be when my water breaks, right? And it was just like, that's how they start their pregnancy out. They don't start it out with like, I'm going to get preeclampsia, or I'm going to get cholestasis, or I'm going to have GDM, right? They don't start off that way. And then with each like crushing blow, they start to say, I have no say in this because I don't know what to do with being sick with preeclampsia or hypertension or anything like that. But I remember I had an antenatal. I was on the antenatal side. And I ended up just, I'm a childbirth educator as well. And well, she was there for so long, we did a childbirth education class. Because she was like, I was supposed to go, but now I'm here. Because we had to monitor her blood pressures. I said, well, I can teach you. What do you want to know? What do you want to prepare for? I can even teach you in case you have pre-E. What will we do? And she was, yeah. So I was like, that's how I kind of spent a few hours of my shift. And we can do that. Like, you know, when you're on the antenatal side, like you don't, there's not a lot going on. And what I notice nurses do is they head on over to the other nurses because they're lonely at the little nurse's station on the antepartum side. Well, you know what? You can do a little childbirth education class for them. Like, these little things that they're just so appreciative of. And, you know, I don't know really, that was the last I saw of her. I don't know whether she went home or whether she birthed there because I was only PRN. But I hope, you know, I go to work and I say to myself, what's great about this? And who am I meant to help today? That's what I ask myself every day I go into work, whether or not it's my coworkers or my patients or the doctors that I work with. Who am I meant to leave with, like, we call it a feeling of increase? Who felt better that I came into their life today? And that's what we all have to ask ourselves when we go into work. I'm sad for the nurses that get burnt out. I never got burnt out. I'm not burnt out. I'm like, you know, I see it differently because of the mindset, right? And that's what I go into work. That's what helps me not get burnt out, because I'm here to help somebody. Why am I here today? Let's find out.
For a last thing, just my own question though, how receptive were the doctors? Because I get a lot of pushback, even with a peanut. Sometimes they're like, don't use that. Da-da-da. Like, they just want to control the situation. They believe the medication and the C-section and their interventions are it. And
this was why.
I know this is a long episode, but I have to know.
This was why I made it so important for you to know why it's working. So that if they give you pushback, first of all, you'll sound smarter than them. I promise you that. I use technical words. Because why did I name it dysfunctional labor maneuvers? Can you guess?
Sounds very professional.
Sounds something a doctor would resonate
with. Yeah.
So one of the things is I will say to them exactly how it's working. So when I say, why is internal femur rotation the word to use? Because, well, I think we need to do internal femur rotation because when they turn their knees in, the greater trochanters and the femur heads are going to open the ischial tuberosity, giving us more side-to-side length. Now, we need her to slide off the bed a bit so the bed will push up against the sacral promontory, dropping the coccyx and opening the anterior-posterior diameter. So what do you think of that?
Okay, you can
draw it. That's what we'll be like, okay.
Good.
And that's why knowing what we're doing, why we're doing, how it works is so important, because I've had that pushback and I fought like so hard in like my learning of words for myself so that I can say it works because of this. And because where I worked, the doctors did get to know me, and I would talk to them about what it is, why it works, how it works, what's going on with it. A few of the doctors came to see me for body work, and they were like, you know the body better than I do. And I do, but it's because I had to sell it. And I knew that. I knew that. And so I'm like, you know, I don't use cute words. I use proper terminology. Like, I don't actually even use the word flying cowgirl unless I need to get it across to who's doing it. But what it really is hyperextension of the hips, creating an anterior pelvic tilt, opening the inlet to help the baby engage. That is what we're doing. This is not woo-woo. It is not cutesy stuff. It is anatomically positional and releasing fascia. Why did I have to know so much about fascia? Because nobody knew. And I had to help them understand so they would start to really get into the fascia release, because it's the fascia release. The fascia releases the soft tissue like the muscles and the ligaments. Once the muscles and the ligaments are released, then the bones can be released. So the true owner of everything is the fascia.
Amazing.
Not the soft tissue, not the bones.
It's all fascia. I mean, that's going to be the name of this. We'll squeeze fascia into the name of this episode. It's just because you Google it or you look for information on it, and there isn't as much as other things. So
No. And it's really... it's pretty complex. Like, it's taken me a lot of years to get to the depth And that was not on accident. So, you know, the depth that I've gone has been through study, study, study. And I know that's not what everybody does. It's not their jam. But that's why I do simplify it in my trainings with nurses to say, like, you don't have to know it to the level that I do, but you do have to know how it works because you may need more time. You got to convince that doctor. And then it's almost like when in the very beginning, I was so afraid. And then after, it was really after the soft tissue work that I started to do, I started to look straight at the doctors and just say, challenge accepted. And they were like, oh, okay. And I'm like, half an hour later, I'm like, she's pushing, she's done. And they were like, and then I would have doctors that, like the one doctor, remember the lady that was about 300 pounds diabetic? She was waiting for me to come on shift. And as soon as I got there, she was like, Mariah, I don't want to bring this girl back to the OR. She's diabetic. She's got whatever BMI. I can't remember what it was. She's like, just, it wouldn't be good. Can you please go do something with her? And I was like, yeah, I will. And I've had doctors say, can you go do your magic? And it's not my patient. And I've had to talk to the nurse. And I'm like, do you mind if I do some stuff with your patient? Because they're kind of asking. And it's gotten a little awkward. But I'm like, it's not about me. It's not about you. It's about this lady here that deserves a good birth. So I kind of have, you know, I've had to have some hard conversations. But that's how you get past doctors, is by outsmarting them.
That makes total sense. I'll brush up on my terminal. I'm so used to working with patients. I was like, oh, speak their language. That makes sense.
You have to speak patient and then you have to speak.
Yeah.
Right?
You do. We are the bridge. We are a bridge, aren't we?
Yes.
Where can we find you? So I think we're going to have nurses, doulas, and parents be all on top of this. Where can they find you and get this app?
Oh, well, I did make it kind of easy to say, like, the app is available on Apple and Android. The DLM app has, you know, you sign up as a parent. It's really for only 38 weeks or more. So only if you're experiencing that kind of prodromal labor, or you can get a free sneak peek. But for parents, they have a subscription price of $9.99. But as soon as it's done, just cancel it. And then for the professionals, it's got the birth professional. You can have an annual subscription of $44.99 or monthly of $4.99. And then if you want to do, I still teach in person. So I am more than happy to, I do a 2-day workshop now because I add in the soft tissue work. And so I've got the comfort measure, just kind of recognizing some signs of survivors. I add the soft tissue body work with the positions. So that has created a 2-day workshop. Otherwise, it's way too long of a day. Or if you want to go at your own pace, my website, mariahdiffy.com, I have a professional tab. You click on the professional tab and it's got the online version. So I have the online version, especially if you're kind of new. The online version does not include the fascia work, but the advanced fascia release for labor is another option. That it's about an hour and a half. And so when you're comfortable with the basics, and you know what, if you've been to a lot of spinning baby stuff, you can just go hop on into the fascia work if you wanted to. But I do teach it a bit different in the dysfunctional labor maneuvers. And that was because I knew what I taught when I was a spinning babies trainer. I made sure that I was not replicating, so that you would get, if you'd had another type of training out there, that you would just, it would just add to what you already know. So it's about adding to our toolbox. So that one, again, online, self-paced, you keep all the material, you get nursing CEUs. And then for parents, the app is just in the app store. And then if you do want soft tissue body work, the easiest thing to do is look in your area for a certified Rolfer, R-O-L-F-E-R, or structural integrator. But when I do, I search for, like, people will message me and I'll search in their area to find them somebody like a certified Rolfer. And I do get more hits on Google if you put Rolfing in. But the work is structural integration. That's the proper term.
Amazing.
Not necessarily.
I've been taking notes. Oh my gosh. Myra, thank you so much for joining us today. This is a masterclass, say the least.
I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to My Friends and Nurse presents the Birthing Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and found it valuable. Before we go, a quick reminder. The information shared on this podcast is for educational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. Always consult with your healthcare provider for any medical concerns or questions. If you enjoy the episode, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your friends. Your support helps us reach more people and continue to bring you great content. Until next time, stay healthy and stay informed.